Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
So we are living in divisive and, let's face it, pretty depressing times. So the question is, well, one of the questions is, if you're going out for a night or day at the theater, do you want to watch partisan politics debated, a harrowing depiction of this country's worst evil, or a show about two sparring Supreme Court justices? Well, I've recently seen theatrical takes on feminism, racism, and the Vietnam War era. Let's just say I did not come out humming, but yes, I have come out thinking. Well, the first one I'll mention is the longest, not in historical time terms necessarily, but in length of play. The Great Society, which is just open at Lincoln Center's Vivian Beaumont, is part two of Richard Schenken's tale of the Lyndon Johnson presidency. Okay, he hasn't been interpreting LBJ's life as long as Robert Caro has, but he has devoted more than 6 hours to the man. In fact, I met Robert Caro at an event last week, and I asked if he would be seeing the play. No, he said, I'm still trying to figure out the man myself. Well, I agree with most others who preferred Schenken's prior take on LBJ, called All the Way, and yes, that one starred Bryan Cranston, who can't do anything wrong. This time, the president is portrayed by Brian Cox, a great British actor, though not a natural fit for LBJ. It's a huge role, and Cox is largely excellent, though a bit relentlessly bombastic. We could have used a little more of the cajoling, even seductive side, the Texas congressman turned VIP, turned president. The play is done almost exactly like All the Way was, minimal set, and the many co-stars sit around in chairs watching the action until they join it, some playing more than one role. The rest of the performers are less notable, including Richard Thomas as Hubert Humphrey, Bryce Pinkham as Bobby Kennedy, and Grantham Coleman as Martin Luther King. The play is pretty much split between the racial wars dividing the country at the time. We have more Negroes in prisons than at the polls, says one, and that little battle heating up in Southeast Asia. The Vietnam War will eat up everything I'm trying to do, Johnson predicted correctly, it turned out. The requests for more money, for more troops, were constant. My answer is yes, but my judgment is no, he says. The play is very long, almost 3 hours, and there's a lot of details. I think it's fair to say that it is a show for history nerds, like me, more than for diehard theater lovers, like me. But there are resonances to contemporary times. Everyone gets a laugh and applause from the Lincoln Center audience. But whether non-subscribers coming to town will choose a play like this when they could stay home and watch MSNBC, well, that's debatable. And now on to Slave Play, which is also far from a typical show and also resonates at times. And I can safely predict that it will be the most talked about production on Broadway this fall. Now, some will find it amazing. Some will find it distasteful. Wildly mixed reactions could help propel folks to buy tickets. First, a bit of background. This play is written by a young man named Jeremy O. Harris, a Yale grad, already being sought after in all mediums, and it enjoyed a wildly successful run at the always risk-taking New York Theater Workshop. Now, the risk-taking continues as they move this provocative, very non-white play to the Great White Way. Though the show is at the Golden Theater, which has only 800 seats, so it fits well here. And the production itself, directed by Robert O'Hara, is rather dazzling in style. Now, this is one that critics are careful about not saying too much about, as a plot surprise occurs about an hour into the show. But you should know that the first hour is rather harrowing and not entirely pleasant stuff to watch. Three sexual acts, biracial, bisexual, and so on. We are in the antebellum South, and everything is racially charged. Now, the second chunk of the show elicits riotous laughter from much of the audience. To others, it plays kind of like an extended sketch. But I can say that we are back to today, and there has been some very interesting role-playing going on. There are inside jokes about the playwright's alma mater, others about life as a struggling actor. One says he moved out of East Harlem so I can finally get to auditions on time. And much humor deals with the world of therapy, disorders upon disorders, And ultimately, the focus is on self-identification and whether interracial couples can ever entirely forget all that went before. Now, I enjoyed segments of Slave Play, and the six performers are all first rate. For me, it grew tiresome. The last 20 minutes, again without giving anything away, struck me as somewhat confusing and unsatisfying, not to mention that the gratuitous nudity seemed unnecessary. But I'm sure there's method behind all the madness. What I can assure you is that you will hear very different responses, and that's what theater should do. And I was pleased to see an ethnically diverse audience. Whether it will draw the usual tourist crowd remains questionable. Much of it is disturbing on an issue, slavery, that in certain ways is clearly having a bit of a moment now in books and films. And that I do applaud. It's always one worth remembering, or at least not forgetting. And finally, I also caught Sisters-in-Law making its debut at the Wallace Theater in Los Angeles. Now, this is a two-hander about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sandra Day O'Connor. There are helpful projections, and the two characters are moved around over the years, from their chambers to their homes and even to the gym and the golf course. But the script could be sharper and more focused, perhaps more imaginatively conceived. Is it political? Well, these two women clearly had, and one still has, strong views. The cases discussed in the play tend to be sexism-related. There is some nice dialogue from lawyer-turned-writer Jonathan Shapiro, mostly imagined, I suspect. "May I be blunt?" asks Ginsburg. "Why start now?" responds O'Connor sarcastically. She also notes at one time, "Why do all New Yorkers talk like psychiatrists?" Their differences are highlighted, but what is most moving are their commonalities, especially in seeing their own importance. "I waited 12 years for there to be another woman on the court," says O'Connor. "What matters is that we're not the last." The two actresses, Tova Felcha as RBG and Stephanie Ferrisee as O'Connor, are fine, but I expect with, frankly, starrier names and perhaps a female writer's polish of the script, this play could easily move around the country, ending up right here in New York City. Now, by the way, there has been a lot of talk and reporting about cell phones in theaters, a few known incidents, and recently performers even grabbing the devices out of the audience. Now, there is rarely a show, I have to say, that I attend when one doesn't go off. And I've often said that I can actually see a time when we'll have to check them before we go inside the theater. But even this turns out to be a confusing and even politically charged issue. The playwright behind Slave Play, for example, was flattered when Rihanna texted him congratulations during that show. Others say if we want younger folks to become theater goers, well, we have to let them feel they can stay connected. Huh. So, Jill, I don't know where you stand on that one, but certainly lots of heavy issues on and off stage these days.
Do you really want to know?
I'm guessing, but go for it.
Oh, no, please, please. What is your guess?
Well, that, you know, why can't you turn them off? They remind you 100 times. They don't always remind you at intermission, which they should probably do. I have to say, when I was in Moscow about a year ago or a year and a half ago, and I was at I was at the Bolshoi, but it was a play being done there, not a ballet at that point. But I remember I was up in the balcony, and I was looking down on the audience. I can't tell you how many phones, I mean, how many lights, you know, were going on with people's cell phones, including a young woman sitting next to me. Now, we were in boxes. But I thought, that's really unbelievable. Do they not have that issue here that doesn't bother other people? So I don't know.
My view is that, basically, cell phones have essentially destroyed communication.
Yeah.
And I think that if you now if our young really can't sit through a live performance mm-hmm. without being tethered to their screen,
right.
We've got a pretty massive problem.
That's right.
And instead of going, oh gee, we want more, you'll forgive me, kind of reminds me of vaping. I can't find a single person who thought it was a good idea at the time.
Right.
But and here we are with a sudden 10 years, that's a decade for anyone who's paying attention.
Addiction and
So yeah. A long time ago somebody said to me that, they've rewritten this very large company's manual to hire more millennials. Like, okay. Oh. You know, so yeah. Really? I mean, that's the sort of... That's the sort of, shall we call it, leading from behind that usually doesn't end well.
Yeah. I mean, look, I can't live without my cell phone, but I can certainly turn it off for 2.5 hours very happily. And there's hardly ever a show that I see where we don't hear. Even when I was on Fiddler, when I was at the Yiddish version of Fiddler on the Roof, somebody's phone would not stop, and everybody was annoyed. And finally, I see a little woman running out, and everybody laughed as we could hear her, you know, running out saying, I'm in a theater, you know, let me try to turn this thing off, you know. But, you know, I don't know, it doesn't seem that hard, and it doesn't seem like we're asking that much of people. I think one of the problems, according to something I read today, was that, you know, young people are so used to taking videos when they go to rock concerts and all that, so maybe they're confused. Okay, now I'm in a show. Though even Lin-Manuel Miranda has been known to really hate cell phones in his theaters. He wouldn't even meet with Madonna backstage because he was annoyed that she was tweeting during Hamilton. So,
I don't think that there's, this is a problem. My opinion is this one isn't negotiable. You can put your phone down. You just can. And if you can't, you should probably consider getting into some sort of program that deals with why you can't put your phone down to watch something real.
No, I think it's a non-negotiable issue, too. I mean, I don't understand who, you know, can you imagine if Arthur Miller?
No.
Somebody, you know, in the middle of death of a salesman. I mean,
no, I can't. No. And I think if you are now so organized that you think that it's really cool to tweet, I don't care how famous you are or not, that you need to tweet or record or do something other than in the midst of it.
Yeah, right.
As I say, perhaps you just you know, maybe it's time for.
Yeah, I think there was one show that I saw.
Emily Post.
Yeah, there was a musical this year, Be More Chill, and I think they were trying to be very hip. I think that was a show. It was a show like that where they said up front, by the way, you know, tweet during the show, do this, let your friends know how much you're enjoying it. You know, they were trying to play to that young audience, and so they thought that was funny, but...
That's different, you know. It's like otherwise, check it at the door. And it's so funny because the New York Times did attempt to make it cool over the last couple of years. There's been the odd piece in Styles and whatnot, you know, that say yes, you know, such and such at their party. Yeah, they had to give up their phones. Yeah, you have to give up your phones if it's you get to a certain level and you know you've got to put the phones down because you don't want people recording everything.
Of course.
And it's just lunacy to think that, you know, everybody else is running around going, oh, yeah, this is fine.
I know. I'm not watching live theater. Anyway, so much for that. And I'll turn off my devices now and I'll see you next week.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.